end would assist him. But our understanding is that because this is a program we have, which is sponsored by the European Union, and we have entered into a contract with the Foundation for Human Rights to assist us to implement. We currently have a number of these community advisory centers throughout the country. I think the number is about 214 at the moment. The 15 that we spoke about, we haven't decided as yet where the location would be. There's a process of public consultations that is taking place, and I think the committee would also welcome to make suggestions so that when we work with the Foundation for Human Rights and make decisions, we would have taken into account the input of the community, because it's an important service that is being rendered to communities. We hire paralegals who provide legal advice to communities, who assist with certificates, issues of IDs, and so on and so on. They even advise on issues related to municipalities and so on. And I personally do not see a conflict in striking a collaboration with traditional courts as soon as the relevant bills have been enacted. But I think my colleague, Advocate Gianni, can just add to this issue. Thanks, Gianni.
Thank you very much, and apologize for not being with you at the start of the time. But just to introduce myself first, Simon Gianna, who is heading the court services within the department, and also I'll come back to the issue seconded to the Office of the Chief Justice to help him establish the new proposed administration. But on this program, the EU program, I think the fair approach will be to brief this committee thoroughly about that program. It's a very huge program that we started, and I think it involves an amount of about 200 million. And I think it is important that we don't just deal with bits and pieces of this particular program, that we can give you the entire spectrum in terms of what this program is all about. But I think in the main, this country in 2007 entered into an arrangement with the EU in terms of which government wanted assistance in terms of a number of areas, poverty, alleviation, economic. Part of the agreement there was that 25% of that money will be utilized to resuscitate or to improve the functioning of civil society. And as you know, that is the Department of Justice. We're quite involved in a number of issues on human rights and other related issues where we do interface quite a lot with civil society. So this program, I think, seeks to identify those areas where we can begin to enter into partnership with civil society to assist us in a number of areas, for the services that have been rendered by the department. So as we speak at the moment, the program is now rolled out to all provinces. I think it's in the process of being rolled out to all provinces. As I'm speaking to you today, we are in KZN where we're trying to interface with most of the role players that are in that particular province. So I think the question that has been raised by Nkosi Olomisa, it's quite difficult to commit ourselves at this stage to say which community advice centers are going to be aligned with this program. Because in the main part of this program is to identify especially areas in rural, and I think it's more directed towards identifying the previously disadvantaged areas where part of our civil society organizations have not been reaching. So this program is targeted towards ensuring that we begin to create the capacity in those areas and so on. So I think it is an open kind of process that we cannot at this stage agree which organizations are going to receive funding. It's going to be an open tender process that is managed by the Foundation for Human Rights on behalf of the Department of Justice. And so I guess perhaps the proposal that we're putting, on the floor by sort of looking at beyond the existing formal, committee advice centers, also to looking at areas of traditional leadership, I think it is an area that we would, once we have issued the proposals, for the services, I think we'd look at. But I think at this stage it's too early to preempt or to say which organizations are going to benefit, because we are still in the consultation stages, trying to give more information in provinces so that when the tenders are going out, people can compete, quite comfortably with the process if it, you know, relates to that particular issue. Okay, I wanted to start from the first issue that we raised by the Honorable Smuts in relation to the seven-point plan. I think it is fair to say that I think we'll provide that information. We have started, I think, SVP, you know, from last year to develop some of those protocols, and some of them are in operation as we speak at the moment, bail protocol, the screening protocol, which ensures that, you know, there's a thorough collaboration between the prosecution as well as the investigators to ensure that when matters are enrolled for hearing, that those matters are screened. So we'll give you know, some kind of proper feedback in terms of that particular issue. Okay, I think on the with regard to the issue around the creation of this new court administration agency, I must first say that I think since the beginning of this year, I've been seconded to the Office of the Chief Justice to help him establish this new, you know, thought about arrangement where the Office of the Chief Justice can begin to take the full leadership in relation to matters pertaining to courts. As you know, the current structure that we have in the Chief Justice Office is not really, you know, quite sufficient to deal with the challenges that he has. So I've been seconded, you know, to go and help him. And I think the first process that we dealt with, firstly, was to look at most of the challenges and the duties that the Chief Justice has in terms of the current public service, I mean the legislation, with a view of creating a structure that is able to give him the full kind of, you know, responsibility to deal with those issues. We have currently, and I think it is a matter that we still have to finalize, I think after consultation with the minister, proposed an interim structure that we are more comfortable that it would enable the Chief Justice now to begin to assert his role in terms of, you know, the judicial management of matters in relation to courts. I think one of the issues that we have also been planning for, because I think it is part of the provisions in the bill which seeks to give full authority around the powers of the Chief Justice and to look at how the Chief Justice can begin to exercise those powers. So the kind of structure that I'm talking about is an interim one, but it sort of visualizes the ultimate structure that I think is being envisaged in terms of the Superior Court Bill. And I think in terms of the stages where we are on the Superior Court Bill and these are the relevant legislation, I hope that my colleague Dion Redman, who's fully in charge of the legislative program, will talk about those issues. But what we intend to do is that I think if, because obviously this process is wholly dependent upon the finalization of the bills that are going to be coming here. And I think our hope is that I think by the year 2011, we should be able to begin to establish this new court agency that is being envisaged. And of course, there are going to be very huge implications that we have alluded to, because part of the issue is that I think in the main, the role that is played by the services that we do in the department relating to courts, that's going to be a section that is going to be affected, I think, in the main, because that's one section that I think in terms of its entirety will be moved to the new court administration agency. And of course, I think the issue you're raising about whether we're going to be getting new people, I think what the minister has made quite clear is that in this process, it's the transfer of functions or which is not going to require, you know, the appointment of new people. We would, I think, in certain instances where we require, you know, specialized kind of skills where we don't have internally, you know, look at that process of, you know, ensuring that that process does take that into consideration. So I think our timeline is 2011, if I were to say, then of course that is something that is beyond our control, is the legislative process that has to come in here. Yeah, then I think just to relate to the issue around the problem around the records, and I think in the main it's the South Gauteng High Court. And there's a specific reason why this problem existed in that area. I think in the first instance, Some 2 years ago, we entered into a new service, the transcription services, and this was located in various provinces. And the previous service provider that was responsible for, you know, the transcription in the High Court then did not get the tender. Now, this resulted in the new service provider being appointed. And when this service provider got appointed, you know, there was supposed to be a transfer of information from the old service provider into the new system. Now, at that point in time, the system was corrupted, and with the result that we lost a number of you know, records. And that's why it was corrupted, in the sense that I think the new service provider that came into place had a new system that was not compatible with the old service provider. So when during the process of transferring that information from the old you know, system into the new one, certain information got lost, and I think in the process there were those kind of records that I think are under discussion that went missing. But of course, what we have done, we have, I think, appointed a specific team to deal with this specific problem, and I think we've been able to, as we have indicated, to be able to trace some of the missing files. And of course, we still, at this stage, for the remainder of those files, we are still in the process of reconstructing them and so on. But of course, I think it is a matter that, as the DG has indicated, that I think in terms of our plan, we intend, and Gauteng South is but one of those courts that we want to make sure that we have, 100% compliance, rate in terms of reconstruction of those records, so that they're enabled to be part of, the system. Now, the issue around the VET law project, and I think we will really gladly accept, because we admit that I think as a department we cannot know it all, and if there are any other service providers out there that can help us, deal with this problem, not in a competitive way, we would really welcome that. I think if there is information that you do say that which is not really consistent with ours, so we are really willing to partner with that particular project just to ensure that we can, because the major aim is to deal with this problem so that we are not faced with it for a very long time. So I really appreciate if you could give us information for those people that we can interact with our team. Okay, on the questions raised by the Honourable Mr. Swart, of course the 7-point plan, I think in terms of the strategy, does indicate that we envisage to implement 60% some of those recommendations. I must say that because the implementation began last year, I think the focus was in terms of building the investigation capacity as well as the revival of our laboratories, the forensic laboratories from the police. So a greater, emphasis in the first year of the implementation of this review process went towards that direction. I think if you listen to some of the improvements that the police are doing, I think there's a greater number of investigating officers that have now been appointed, but of course also creating a new career for investigators, because part of the problem has been that if you are a uniform police, you get the same salary as the investigators. So I think there's an improvement that has been done in this area. Now, I think what is going to be focused on, as the DG has indicated, in terms of those 7-point plans, of course, the issue is that we're going to deal with them, all of them. I think our target is that by 2011, we must have implemented most of those recommendations. I think this year, one of the challenges that this program is also going to focus on is also to, because in the past there's been some dislocations with departments that are so key in driving the criminal justice process. For example, the issues around the forensic laboratories that are managed by the Department of Health. If you look at how those processes have been dealt with, there is no sort of concentration at the moment. So we have now intended, in fact, we have now put them into this particular project, because part of the issue was the lack of funding, why, in some instances, some of those laboratories were not well kept and so on. So one of the things that I think this project will also try and help at the cluster level is to ensure that all departments, are integrated with those kind of plans. And I think the new team that we have made reference to here, that the four critical, staff will be created, already there is existence. And I must also, you know, thank the business, you know, community, because it has been helping government in this area. And I think recently they've also seconded one of their chief business person, Vellis Calls, to continue with this particular project. And so we will be able, I think, to ensure that this project is also integrated with the work of departments, because I think in the past, one of the challenges that we realized was that it was a project running, you know, parallel to what other government departments are doing. It was not fully integrating what the work of other departments are doing. So I think in terms of this new arrangement now, we have established teams from each and every department that is targeted by this program, so that whatever gets recommended by the Criminal Justice Review Program, it also gets implemented across, you know, the government departments in the cluster as well. The Awaiting Trial Prisoners Project, it is still a project that is also aligned to the review process. We still have that, what we call the ATD program, the Awaiting Trial Detainees Project, that is managed by the Department of Corrections, which is also integrated with this. We have also specific, and I think it is also one of the biggest projects that we would need to brief this committee about it, because part of what we've done, we have identified what are the hotspot areas where we have this kind of bigger problems. What are the, what is the nature of the problems? Why do we have so many prisoners? And I think the part of the problem was that we had people that were in prison for a longer period. In fact, the part of this project identifies those prisoners that have been in jail awaiting trial for more than 7 years. We've identified and also tried to ensure that those seven cases that we identified, and also we have enabled them, those cases, to be expedited. As I'm speaking to you now, I think we only have about two of those cases that are still remaining. We've categorized the number of these prisoners according to years, you know, and this particular program, also project, looks at how we can expedite those. We've also looked at the issues around, I'm just now talking about management problems around the bail management. Part of the problem is that we have legislation, but that legislation, the way it gets implemented by the cluster, leaves much to be desired, in the sense that the legislation empowers corrections department as well as police to deal with this problem in a way that could minimize the overcrowding in prison. Now, in the past, it has been because it has been a disjointed approach. You would find that they will only leave these matters to be dealt by the courts, that was the prosecutors and the magistrates. And whereas the bail provision also allows them in certain, you know, conditions that they can approach the courts to have some of the bail conditions where people, you know, they don't pose much risk to be released. So part of this project, we have identified, you know, those interventions where we are also trying to ensure that the police play their role as well as the corrections. Now, this bail protocol that I'm making reference to, it tries to bind departments in terms of how, when we have these matters, we have to deal with, you know, in terms of our processes and so on. Chair, then the issue around the, I think you wanted to say maintenance investigators and inspectors. Yeah, I think it's also a program that a project that we have also this year set money aside to expand the maintenance investigators, especially in those areas where we still have problems, where we don't have maintenance investigators. But this is an ongoing project that you know, seeks to overhaul the entire maintenance issues in our courts, and I think we are monitoring this on a monthly basis in terms of statistics. We do keep statistics that indicates to us the numbers of cases that are being registered, and also to indicate the disposal rate of those cases that we're keeping up on a daily basis. But also part of the problem where the maintenance investigators are helping us is on those matters that we have orders that have been sort of affected, but people are not coming up to collect their money. And part of the problem was part of ignorance, and the fact that I think in terms of our awareness program, the department was not reaching, you know, quite a substantial number of those beneficiaries. Now, this is not a project that I think we have made reference to in the past. It's still but part of the our maintenance project, which seeks to ensure that we identify those areas, but also help. Because part of the challenges with these big monies that were not being collected was that if you give it to a person who has no skills how to manage those finances, that money is likely to dissipate, you know, within a short period of time. So, for example, in the KZN, one of the programs that we had started with was to join hands with the departments, you know, relevant departments like economic department, the Department of Finance, where we link up with the empowerment, the finance empowerment program for women, so that this money, when it's you know, made available to women, that money, you know, those women can be able to discharge and make use of that money quite profitably, with the view of sustaining, you know, the children. So those are some of the things that we are linking up. It's not only a program that we are running as a department, but we're also looking at how we can assist generally the rest of you know, poor women that you know, are deserving to get this kind of money. Now, Chair, I think relating to the issues raised by Honorable Mr. Sibanyoni, and I think if I've raised the issues of JDAS, I hopefully that they'll be catered for in the finance progress report. Well, the three courts that we did mention here that do not include Ekangala, specifically because Ekangala, as we speak at the moment, in terms of our own plans, it's not readily finalized or completed for opening. So the three courts that we mentioned, those are courts that are ready that the minister, anytime, depending on his availability, can go and open. Now, the seven courts that the DG made mention of, and of course we talk about up to 2013. In other words, there are some of those courts that are going to be completed in this financial, and Kangala is but one of those courts that are going to be completed. But also the seven includes new courts like in Tuzuma, which is a new court that is in its construction phase. It also includes the Limpopo High Court, which we have also began with it as well, and we're hopefully that I think within 2013 that court should also be completed. So I think that's why we have tried to stretch the period up to 2013, but Ekangala, I think it will be but one of those courts, if it's completed because of the technical problem that we had with the contractor there, it will be ready to be opened this year. Well, Chair, the issue raised by the professor, and I think which seeks to talk to the outcome of the cluster, it's a question as to how this department will measure whether we've fully, you know, created a community that is safe and that feels safe. Of course, this we're not going to do singularly as a department. Our efforts, as the DG has indicated, some of our targets and outcomes are integrated with the outcomes of the cluster that have been approved by the by Cabinet. So in our area, if I were to be specific, exactly what is it that we're going to be focusing on? The areas that we have identified and which we hope that if we can improve, they are around creating efficiency within our codes. Because part of the issue is that we want to make sure that once matters have been investigated, fully investigated, and if they are ready to be on our roll, that our courts are able to fast-track those matters. So in the main, I think it talks to about, I think the DG made reference to what we want to do about the finalization of, cases. It talks to about our, improving of our processes at the court. Case flow management that we have talked to this committee in the past is going to be the driver in terms of ensuring that at the early stages of the trial that the judges or the magistrates take the responsibility in managing those cases. And so I think in the main, if we can improve the functioning of our courts, that can help, because part of the problem is that the perception that is in the community is that people commit crime and the cases take so long to an extent that the people don't feel that, the justice system, can help them. So those are some of the things that we thought as a department, our contribution that we can make is to help our system to be more effective in trying to address these issues. Well, the transformation that we talk about in the Office of the Chief Justice definitely is going to affect the high courts and the JPs in the various provinces. We started precisely with the Chief Justice because we thought that the best office to start with first is the central one. Once you have that office fully functional, only then can you begin to look at the lower level structures. Now, the intention, I think, which are also captured in some of the provisions of the Superior Court's bill, is to ensure that we have a fully integrated judicial system that is accountable for its services. Now, what we visualize in the provinces is that the JPs will also take more or less a similar approach where they integrate most of the judicial issues. As you know, currently the lower courts report differently. You know, they don't account on their activities to the JPs. Similarly with the regional court president, they've got their own structures. Now, what is envisaged in this bill is to have an integrated process where, you know, say, for example, in a province, the JP would then take the full responsibility in terms of integrating most of the services that are being managed by the judiciary in that particular area. So, but it's going to take a process, and I think, as I've indicated, it's something that is dependent upon the finalization of the legislation once it is completed. Chair, I think I just need to deal with the last question, if I haven't missed the others, but the last question in relation to courts and the judiciary, and that is in relation to the computerization that you raised around the problems of computerization in Wynberg as well as the Johannesburg. This is but part of the 7-point plan implementation program, because one of the pointers there that the DG indicated is integration of our systems. Now, part of the issues that we have started implementing is to align the docket management from the police with regard to with the court system as well. So, in the police, if I were to just mention part of the project, we created what we call an e-docket management system, where we try to automate most of the information and capture it on a system. And that information is also integrated with what in our court services, where we have what is called Integrated Case Management System, ICMS. Now, the e-docket as well as the ICMS, they have been integrated, I think, at the first phase. And as I've indicated to you, we have only, you know, a number of pilot sites, and I'm not too sure whether Wynberg is one of those, but courts like Cullinan in Pretoria, nearer to Pretoria, those are areas that we've started integrating with this. Now, I think the intention in the main is to ensure that, firstly, we automate the rest of our processes, but also to create a backup system in case, you know, dockets, you know, get missing. Similarly, as far as the court as well, if you can, you know, a case, you know, charge sheet that gets missing, you've got a system in terms of which to retrieve that. Now, it is a system that we're implementing incrementally, because we didn't want to take a big bang approach. You see, with the IT systems, if you take a big bang approach, you're likely to get problems. In other words, if you don't implement it incrementally to an extent that you're able to make sure that it can add value to the processes. Now, we may not have reached, and I think I'm not too sure that, like I'm saying to that Wynberg, but one of those courts that we have not, I think I'll just check on that. But I think part of this program will try and address quite, in a bigger way, some of the current manual problems that we have in the process. It's a program that I think it will take a little bit longer to implement, because we are also trying to integrate the IT systems from Home Affairs, so that when we identify a person, we use a common framework than, you know, the current system that we have at the moment. And similarly as well with regard to the fingerprint printing project, that also tries to ensure that the police, what they have, it's integrated with the harness, which is called the harness system. So I think it is a very big project that I think, fortunately, we have had funding for from the Treasury, that I think once it is fully functional, we will ensure that the entire value chain of the criminal system is more integrated in terms of how it deals with issues. The only departments that currently have not been attended to is corrections, which we are still dealing with, their systems improvement. Home Affairs, as I've indicated, it's about one of those departments that have just joined us. And the Health Department, as far as the forensic laboratory management issues, we are also developing a tool that would ensure that in terms of these protocols, that those matters that are referred to the Health for forensic investigation, that also we create some kind of timelines by which they're integrated with these new protocols. I think I thought I've just done my bit in terms of what I was. If there's anything missing,
I was about stopping you now.
Yeah.
It's not a bit, it's more than a bit. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Just on the question of the legislation, the question raised by the Honourable Smut, the Superior Court's bill and the Constitution 19th Amendment bill was provided to the heads of court, the Chief Justice and the heads of court, and we have recently received their comments on the bill. We are looking at those comments and looking at adapting the bills in line with the comments that we have received. And the intention is to submit these two bills to the meeting of the Judicial Service Commission on the 12th of April of this year, after which there might be further amendments, but we will then submit to Cabinet and publication in the Gazette. And we're looking, our time frame for that is April, May, for submission to stakeholders perhaps once again, and then to Cabinet between May and June. So that's the time frame for those two bills. The other bill dealing with the judicial authority and the court administration agency that was referred to by Mr. Gianni, we are working on a policy document together with the bill. We are still waiting for inputs from the Chief Justice and the other heads of court. And once we have received that, we will then finalize that legislation as well to follow on the other two bills that we will introduce.
Ken, thank you. I think we have had a comprehensive discussion. I therefore want to thank the department on the third plan. I'm sure the committee is passing that now. We are accepted. Trump speaks on behalf of the committee saying that. Then we are going to have 5 minutes just to stretch our legs, then we start with the budget.
Thank you very much, Chair. And we thank the committee for adopting our threat plan. Please just allow us to then edit properly, because there are a lot of areas for editing. We won't change the document. Thank you.
That's cool. You are allowed to be as thorough as you can. Yeah, 5 minutes. The coffee is here. I don't know if it is here or not, but I said of coffee should be here. Yeah? Eventuality, we might want to get down to business. Yeah, let's start with the budget. I think there are two documents that have been distributed. DJ, you are with you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Excuse me. The budget document, we've circulated two documents. The first document is the thicker of the two, and then the second document is entitled MTSF alignment. And this, the second bit of the document, seeks to begin to get resources from the existing baseline to fund the identified outcomes, which are cluster-related on the one level, the outcomes that the minister had alluded to on the other, and then the third level is the level of areas in the department which we've identified and which we've spoken about in the strategy that requires additional funding. So when we talk to the budget, if members could bear that in mind. The content of the document is on the second page, where we deal in broad terms with what is the approved budget, which is at 11.3 billion for 09-10, 12 billion for 10-11, 13 for 11-12, as well as 13.9, which is almost 14 for year 2012-2013. In terms of the in principle, Chair, our budget has been reduced over time. So for this MTSF MTF period, we've had a fundamental reduction of our budget on page 5, which totals to 1.4 billion. So we are really now being tested to do more with less. And if we succeed in doing that, we would have achieved the key outcome that we've been thrown by the Department of Finance. My colleague, Mr. Johan Johnson, will deal with the details of the budget. However, I would like to just concentrate on page 6 in dealing with what does it mean to do more with less, as we understand it as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. In certain areas, we will have to find savings through reduced spending on non-core functions and activities, including shifting resources from administrative components to frontline services. What we mean by this is that the areas that we said we are going to have a very heavy 2010, most of those areas are funded, but there are areas which are not funded where we are introducing priority interventions to address, in particular, issues of court record management, as well as, broadly speaking, records in the department. So in areas where it's not funded, we've gone through a squeezing of savings to ensure that we do that. In certain areas where courts are also struggling, we've requested that colleagues squeeze off the budget to ensure that we do have money to enhance the services that we ought to be enhancing, because we are not going to get any further allocation. There's some element of rationalizing public entities and agencies to save money and improve accountability. Our agencies, just like any other agency in government, always want more money. So if you can help it, they will get all your money. The reality of the situation is that this government is not going to give us any more money, so everybody must rationalize. But we must also be very sensitive to the fact that we have OSD funding, which we had not budgeted for, and it was a huge amount. We've already funded at least phase one of the OSDs, and we are moving to phase two. And that is really taking a sizable chunk of our budget, and my colleague will speak specifically to the numbers. And so we've had to rationalize very seriously to ensure that we keep to that obligation which government committed us when we signed that agreement. The third issue is really reviewing public spending and weeding out poorly performing programs and low priority activities and ineffective policies within our system, but also broadly speaking within the system, in the justice system. What we are saying here is that some of the projects that we have, and this is not just common to the Department of Justice, it's common across government, is that we have projects that we become synonymous with, but some of those projects, we've forgotten why we started them in the first place, because they've been going on and on and on forever, and we really need to reprioritize those resources that we are investing in some of those projects, and we are not an exception to the rule. Obviously, we have to weed out corruption and the opportunities for corruption in our system, and this is going to drive this budget as well. If you look at the outcomes of the JCPS cluster, that's one fundamental area where we have to finalize, in fact, this year. And by October, we need to have finalized a baseline information on how we will root out fraud and corruption within the justice system. And therefore, that must see its way into our budget as well, because that priority is not funded separately as a priority. And then, obviously, there is a need for just a broad culture change in how we expend our resources. And I'm not going to introduce it here because I haven't spoken to my colleagues, but we are already looking at opportunities of savings within the department to ensure that we have money available. And so part of this budget will then, I'm requesting the members to see it in the context of what we have been allocated in terms of the ENE program, but I'm also requesting the members to see that we still have opportunities of achieving some savings and redirecting those savings into the priority projects that we have highlighted in areas where those priority projects have not been funded. I will then, Chair, request your permission to hand over to my colleague so that he takes us through the details. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG and Honourable Chairperson. I think the last slide possibly set the context for us. I mean, we've got to reduce budget allocations. In the previous financial year, we spent 99.4% of our budget, but the previous Minister of Finance always raised the question, what was the quality of spend? We had a lot of money, we've underspent. Now we've got a problem, we need to improve the quality of our resource allocation and make sure that it gets to the appropriate places. Now, this presentation, the basis for your the approval by Parliament will be what was in the estimates of national expenditure tabled in Parliament in mid-February, what is in the appropriation statement. But what this presentation tried to do is, in addition to the normal program economic classification presentation, it gives you a bit more. I mean, and possibly we would want to answer the questions, how much money do we spend on maintenance and on day-to-day maintenance of our facilities? How much money do we spend on upgrading? On how much? What is our donor fund allocations from foreign donors? So, let this be the context. And I think the last thing for me is that perhaps in the second presentation, people always criticize the budget, and the core question is, how is this budget aligned to the departmental strategy? The second presentation tried to give you a sense to all those outputs that we've identified, to what extent money has been made available. Surely, perhaps in most cases, not enough, but it can at least give an indication of the baseline provision for the outputs that we've tried to, try to achieve. So, if I can go to slide 7, we've got 5 programs, as I alluded to earlier. Our budget for next year, if I can see, in somewhere in the middle, there's a total for programs is 10.2 billion rand. And then we've got a separate program that relates to the compensation of judges' salaries and magistrates' salaries. This is an area that is being funded by National Treasury. It's called a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. But under the accountability and the reporting responsibility of the DG is the line in the middle for next year, 2010-2011, of 10.25 billion. And what you can see is that, proportionally, we spend a lot of money on court services and prosecuting services, and that is reflected in the table on page 7. If I can go to the next slide, slide 8. What this slide tried to do is to show you the area of growth. And it's quite obvious that court services does have substantial growth over a 6-7 year period. And the major cause driver for court services is our personnel. Approximately 13,000 of our 17,000 officials are working in the court service environment, and the average cost of staff has increased, and we've increased establishments in court services as part of capacitation of the various courts. There's one area that is also increasing, and it is auxiliary services, because there's also essentially driven by additional allocations to the legal aid board. If I can go to the next slide. And I think the interesting slide for this figure for me here is under our operational budget. This slide is stating the 12 billion rand differently. How much do we spend on personnel? How much do we spend on goods and services? For me, the impact of the efficiency cuts by National Treasury is that if you look at our goods and services, essentially our budget remains the same over the next year compared to the current financial year. It's important then we need to try to ensure greater efficiency in how we allocate money and how we utilize and spend money. So our the major driver of our budget in the past number of years was surely personnel. We've made the commitment as a department that we will absorb the occupation-specific dispensation for legally qualified personnel. And I think that is a major reason for the increase in per capita cost of our personnel. I improved the dispensation that will possibly have the desired outcome of retention of legally qualified personnel. Perhaps if I can reflect on buildings and other fixed structures, the one-line item, over the next 3 years, possibly 1.5 billion rand available for building of new courts and maintaining of existing courts. Now, surely, if an average court costs of approximately between 230 and 300 million, it's not a lot that we can do. But this is our baseline budget allocation, and we can confirm over the past number of years that we were really successful in spending the full the full allocation. If I can go to the next slide, I think the next slide confirms what I've just said. Slide 10. It gives you a sense of personnel cost. The line on top surely gives us an indication of the relative growth in the various standard items. If I can go to the next slide, then further, the next slide is that will give you a bit more information because you get a sense of the broad budget allocation. But what are we spending on high courts and family advocates? This is what the next group of slides may try to reflect. If I can go to Program 1, there's 1.4 billion rand. You can then see money are being spent on salaries of the minister and the deputy. This is slide 12. Yes, page 12. Page 12 reflects the salaries of the minister, deputy minister, the management of this department, and then also corporate services. Under corporate services, it is a spending on human resource management, finance, and IT, and then office accommodation. Office accommodation, perhaps the appropriate term, is property management. This is the amount that we spend on office rental, municipal rates, and services. So there you can see the growth in the budget. We've got a problem that our staff establishment has increased over the last number of years, with no concurrent increase in the budget for property management. And we, from the baseline, we try to channel money to open more master's offices, to open new court facilities, to respond to the needs of officers. But our big problem is inflationary pressures. Surely, if the budget increase was 7% and the escalation in property rentals is more, then we should have a problem. Municipal rates and taxes, it's a big cost driver here. So I think this budget is under strain, but it is commitments that we need to come and fulfill. The next slide quickly just in a pie chart format gives you a sense that we spend 61% of our budget. For next year, we'll spend 61% of the administration budget on corporate services. But again, it's not like correctional services where they've got a per capita cost, per capita incarceration cost, member prisoner. Our primary cost driver is the cost of personnel. Appointed finance people, appointed IT people, appointed HR people will drive the cost of a particular sub-program. Slide 14. Previous questions this allocation now confirms how are we spending on the court services, and it's quite obvious that on the sub-program like lower courts that we must be proportionally or substantially more. So 2.3 billion rand of our budget for next year will be spent on lower courts. But the slide also gives you a sense of spending on family advocates. It is a response to the change in legislation work that we need to do in relation to maintenance and in relation to children. A few years ago, this budget was around about 28 million, and the department channeled funds to capacitate the family advocate. You can see the budget for the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal. When we will argue in finance and budget, this is a realistic budget, because people can ask, but why are you spending comparatively low, a lower budget on Supreme Court of Appeal? The thing is, it is driven by the approved personnel establishment. I can easily tell you that the amount allocated in the previous financial year of approximately 13, 14 million is sufficient for the operational cost of the Supreme Court of Appeal. But personnel is the major cost driver. I think I give more information on facilities management later on, the breakdown of how we intend to spend the facilities management budget. So, mostly in regions, court services, we will spend 3.87 billion rand. Slide 15, again, it just gives you a sense that the percentage spending of budgets for specialized courts and lower courts and some family advocates. And substantially more money having spent on lower courts. Slide 16, this relates to our state legal services, and it gives you a sense of how much we spent on state law advisors, litigation and legal services, the master of the High Court, legislative development and law reform. If I would have given you a 7-year picture on the master of the High Court, we could have seen that there was a substantial increase because more personnel were appointed in the office of the master of the High Court. So there's a substantial growth in the budget of the master of the High Court from a lower base. Slide 17 just gives you an indication of the proportional allocation per sub-program. So the next slide 18, gives you a sense of the National Prosecuting Authority. Surely they will do their own presentation, but they are part of the tabled vote expended estimates in Parliament. So at this stage, we can just highlight to you that proportionally, they spend much more money on public prosecutions. They had the opportunity of additional funding or baseline funding for the appointment of 2 prosecutors per court. And this is a thing that is part of the baseline, and you'll see substantial growth if you do a comparison over a 7-year period. The point is, that money already kicked in, and we need to see it in the establishments. So this is the high-level breakdown. The NPA will possibly provide more detail once they appear before you. But I want to make the point that approximately 72% of the budget are spent directly on prosecution services. Slide 19, again, just confirms the point that proportionally more of this program are being spent on public prosecutions. If I can go to slide 20, essentially refers to the payments that we are doing, mostly payments that we are doing as part of transfer payments, to entities. It's a Chapter 9 for constitutional institutions and also the public entities. And there you can see that the various allocations. I think within this MTF cycle, for the first time, the budget for the Legal Aid Board will reach a billion rand. And it is driven by smaller additional allocations for expansions of establishment, but also the increase in the per capita personnel cost because of the OSD. There's a line called justice modernization. This is an allocation linked to what Mr. Gianni said earlier, made by National Treasury for IT systems interventions across the justice cluster. So this is money that justice are managing, in where we assist the Home Affairs, Department of Correctional Services, with certain projects to improve the integration of systems. So if we are going to look at the implementation of the review of the criminal justice system and justice modernization, a lot of money will come, but basically all the money will come from this line item. And then this possible question, but why do you put aside 1,000 rand for the President's Fund? Apart from this 1,000 rand for the President's Fund, at the end of February, there's approximately 961 million rand in the President's Fund. And now this money needs to be at one or other states after conclusion of certain processes. It needs to be distributed, as part of reparations of the TRC process. Okay, what we are doing is we keep the fund alive. If Parliament, maybe, or the President at one stage, appropriate additional funding, then at least the sub-program is alive. And also then represented political parties fund, we just get the money, and then we will transfer the money to the Independent Electoral Commission, and they will distribute the money on a quarterly basis. We transfer the money to the IEC. So this is the various entities. You might know that previously we had the Commission for Gender Equality here. It's no longer with us. They're now part of the Women's Ministry. Slide 21 gives you a sense of the proportional allocations, and you can see the legal aid board takes up a bigger portion of the allocation. Now, how can we put this budget differently? As members of Parliament, you will see in the appropriation, the appropriation bill, you will see just programs and perhaps economic classifications. But what we've done here is we just gave you, lower level detail of the various branches. How much do we spend on court services? How much do we spend on justice college? So that you can see perhaps a bit more on what is the investment in IT and staff development. So this is, normally you won't see this kind of information in the appropriation bill or the estimates of national expenditure. Slide 23, for regional interest, this is the various budget allocations to the respective regions. We still need to make additional allocations. We've got budgets for day-to-day maintenance, upgrading of infrastructure, and it will supplement the allocations to the respective regions. But this is an area that we surely need to improve. In regions. In regions, we spend approximately 300 million rand on traveling. Now, a lot of money that would be on government transport, because we need to transport prosecutors and judiciary and magistrates in some areas. But telecommunication, GG transport, the challenge for our regions would be in the context of this budget cut that we must improve our efficiency in that area. If I can go to slide 24, some repetition. This is the various independent bodies where we affect certain transfer payments. You can see the allocations here for the public protector and the SIU from Willy Hofmeyer. Slide 25, if I can perhaps give you a sense of, now this is compliance issues. Treasury says we've earmarked this amount. You cannot spend this money for any other than the original purpose. So property management, buildings and fixed structure, the integrated justice program, I've alluded to you earlier about the IT justice modernization. This is from the big 300 million, this is the money earmarked for the various departments to ensure the integration of the various IT systems. We were quite fortunate, and you will see it in our strategic plan that we've got a particular baseline for the reduction of criminal case backlogs. Now, 322, 338, surely this is an error. I must just check the last amount there. But the point is, the breakdown there gives you a sense that in the baseline of justice, 73 million, 74 million, and 77 million is the money for this particular project. Surely the NPA has an allocation, and also the legal aid board. I think Treasury surely has a particular expectation that with this baseline, surely you need to mean that you must put a dent into the case backlog, especially at a regional court level. Then there's the third one, the last one, the third party funds public-private partnership. There you can see approximately just over 100 million rand a year is available. The CFO can perhaps later add more information, but this was money allocated a few years ago. It's still part of the baseline of the department. So this is a summary then of the various earmarked amounts. If I can go to the next slide, for me, this is an important slide if we really want to improve the quality of our access to justice, the quality of our court experience. For me, you can see day-to-day maintenance, $25 million. Intention is to distribute that day-to-day maintenance money to courts so that each court manager will have an allocation if there's a window to be fixed or if there's a need for a toilet to be fixed. We've done it before, and we need to continue with that. Then the rehabilitation. This is substantial in upgrading or investment in dilapidated court infrastructures, and then also upgrading of infrastructure. So this gives you a sense of where we can allocate money to assist our court management to improve conditions at court. The next slide 27. I think we are not really doing good here. Funding is a problem. We might be the budget planners within the department, but we surely see, if you look at the presentations to portfolio committees, that we need to do a bit more in resourcing of these various pieces of legislation. You can see the baseline, and we get guidance from the relevant managers. But we've got $80 million, $160 million, and $195 million over the next 3 years for legislation implementation in respect of vulnerable groups. Now, the NPA, social development, legal aid board need to share, and correctional services in some areas will also call as part of our integrated work, please assist us if there's particular responsibilities for us. So I think this is an area that we, over the medium term, we surely need to look for additional funding, because based on information from our people in vulnerable groups, that is surely insufficient. And then there's some provisions for civil jurisdiction, redemarcation of magisterial districts, protection of information bill in traditional courts. So about 5 million rand annually for these pieces of legislation. And then perhaps there were questions previously on this. Slide 28, this is a sense of official development assistance, or commonly known as donor funding. We had good experiences years ago, but it seems that donor funding is dwindling. There is a list of the current projects, and it seems that in 2-3 years' time, we'll only have one funded donor project. Now, perhaps the one that was previously alluded to on the advice offices and constitutional development area there, the European Union allocated, and this is based on the exchange rate, 294 million rand in total. Some of this money will go to the Foundation for Human Rights, but for the department, this is the money that we have available over the next 3 years for spending on that program. The big challenges in our planning is these things must be sustained. In 3 or 4 years' time, the agencies are out of the department, and then we need to fund that area. But this gives you a sense of the various donor-funded projects within the department. If I can highly summarize, this is surely, when the budget and strategy people, and we want to work closely with them, when they conceptualize the plan, we surely would want to sit back and listen. But from the finance perspective, this is what we possibly see. There's a drive for expansion of establishment, appoint more people, all the child justice clerks, maintenance investigators, to be appointed, put strain on our system. And I think the first strain is additional accommodation. And I think in response to access to justice and implementation of legislation, we surely need to channel or negotiate or engage Treasury or look at our own baseline for funding for additional accommodation. Then personnel establishment expenses. Finance raised the point that perhaps our planning was also not too good and not aligned with some areas of development within the department. we plan to open courts, but when we engage Treasury, we ask money for the capital part of the court. And then when the court is ready, suddenly we realize we need funding for operations. Maybe we need to improve our own planning, planning in this area. Then we've got a need for internship learning and development and recruitment under personnel establishment expenses. And then technical personnel adjustments, we will live with it. We will live with it for now. I mean, that there's OSD for legally qualified personnel. If this thing has a carry-through effect, and as the personnel costs increase, I mean, more or less budget is available for operations, but this is an area that we perhaps will need to engage Treasury more. And then perhaps linked to this, to the seven-point plan of the IGS, information technology, I mean, improvement in business productivity, IT solutions. Justice spent a lot of money, or we spent a lot of money in the past number of years in computerization. And a lot of it were funded through savings. Our big challenge is 3-4 years later, the computers are out of warranty. They are outdated, and then we need to replace. And I think this is an area that we also perhaps would need some more money. I think this for us it is just internal reflection as budgets that when we do the planning for the department and advise the county officer, we need to flag these areas. Slide 31, I've raised the issue of the implementation cost of new and proposed legislation. Security and risk management is an area that we need to improve. And I've alluded to review the criminal justice system. Implementation costs of recommendations after cabinet and parliamentary endorsement and approval. When a protocol as part of the review is formulated, possibly there is no financial implications. But if you look at the seven-point plan, there are areas where possibly finance needs to come to the party and make additional funding available. Access to justice, increasing proximity of court services to all this relates to our facilities. But the last slide, and this is surely informed by the minister and the direction by the accounting officer. This is new things, and it's important that we perhaps take notice. As there's a change in environment, filing document and record management, it is an area that we need to look at, and we will share with you proposals on how we want to address it. Enhancement of constitutional development programs, development of the oversight mandate and functions, communication, the language service at court, the 2010 World Cup. For the 2010 World Cup, luckily, we've put aside $45 million. Library service in various provinces, and then enhanced training and development capacity. So, Honourable Chairperson, this is the document that will be the basis for your assessment of the vote as tabled. If I can go, this one will be quick. The second one. The second one tends to respond to the strategic priorities. For me, surely we cannot have a strategy going in one direction in the budget not respond to it. What we are trying to do with this presentation is to look at the various outputs identified and just check how are these things funded or what kind of additional funding can we make available for it. Now, in the document, slide 2, the strategic document identified 4 broad outcomes. Previously, it was 3 strategic goals. Now the document identifies 4 broad outcomes. And it is about governance. It is about court capacitation. If I can perhaps look at the various outcomes, I can then perhaps give you a sense of the things that was reported this morning, to what extent it was funded. On slide 3, on outcome 1, there you can see how much money are we spending on improving internal control. I think the third line for me is quite relevant. Filing management and document management. As it is indicated, we've looked at our baseline. We consider this is important. We've identified possibly $108 million in the first year. And we say that if we possibly can put 50, 55, and 60 million rand over the next 3 years in this, then we can perhaps substantially address the weaknesses in that area. It gives you a sense of the budget for securing our infrastructure, integrity oversight, victim support. If I can go to slide 4, this relates to outcome 2 as identified, and this relates to capacitation of the Office of the Chief Justice, strengthening there. There you can see, an indication of some of the outputs, to what extent has been funded, the civil justice system review. The money has now been made available for the research. Within justice, money for case flow management, implementation of the Child Justice Act, and as I've indicated to you, reduction of case backlogs across, there is a substantial budget allocation under the control of the department. Then outcome three on page 5 relates to the various outputs in relation to court administration. And what we're doing there is give you a sense of what is the existing budget allocations for courts, for absolutely at court level, for the 4 high courts, for the X number of high courts, the specialized courts. Perhaps in response to a previous question, efficient maintenance services. That budget makes provision at this stage for the appointment of approximately 430 maintenance investigators and maintenance officials. Now, with this money for implementation of legislation, we will supplement this budget. So there you can see the various budget allocations for the various outcomes or outputs that we've identified in the strategic plan. And then lastly, on slide 6, gives you a sense of the main. Again, that it relates to the various outputs on state litigation, the Master's Office, the capacitation of the constitutional development component, and to what extent these areas has been funded. Thank you, Chairperson.
There's a lot of information here, Chair, that we've got to work through.
I might just say the presentation was quite good.
Yeah.
After this month's discussions, it makes a lot of sense, at least to me.
Yes, thank you. And it is a matter of great concern that there is a decrease in the budget in real terms of $23.3 million in effect if you take inflation into consideration. And in view of our new powers in terms of the Monetary Amendment Bill, this is the budget for the next year from to the beginning of next year. We will need to monitor on a monthly or quarterly basis to assist the department, both to hold it accountable, but also to assist it with these budgetary challenges that the department is facing. A huge amount of additional requirements have been placed on the department, and I think that it will be incumbent upon us as the Portfolio Committee to look at our powers in terms of the Monetary Amendment Bill and to ensure that the department is properly mandated and funded. That is what every other portfolio committee will be doing, and I think that we might need to make submissions to the Appropriations Committee as to the issue, and I'm sure the department will as well, but just from our side. So that's just my general comment. Can I just ask then, in terms of the OSD funding that placed a huge additional budgetary pressure upon you. You've had phase one now. Phase two is now coming in. Is that included in your budgetary calculations? And you indicated that your personnel is the main cost driver. At the same time, you've got a huge number of vacancies. Are those vacancies budgeted for? And then to distinguish from that, your additional requirements such as the Child Justice Bill, they are additional that might not be budgeted for, but I just need to get an understanding of the personnel aspects. Then on the litigation and legal services, page 16, do you understand it correctly that litigation costs relate to personnel? It's not the costs of litigation as such, because that you recover from agent departments, such as if you incur disbursement to pay an advocate, you then recover that. And I just need an understanding of that figure. And then thirdly, are you expecting in the end of this present financial year any rollovers, under expenditure? Where would we see those figures? You might not have that now, but we would need to know that. Thank you, Chair, for those two questions.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe my question will not start exactly with you.
there's something, I don't know whether in the records, about filling the vacancies of supply chain management targeting September. I was worried about that because I thought I was going to raise a question that looking at, taking into account the challenges of the Auditor General, your first commitment of money starts from the 1st of April. So it means you have April, May, June, July, August, September. Having not, with immediate effect, dealt with the capacity that is critical to improve that. I'm not sure what is your response to that. Is it the issue of money, or is it because it's the natural processes of government? Where actually the problem is? The second issue is, if I look at this document, this one, I am not sure, if I look at the documents where you had your measurable outcomes, your outputs and so on, and I look at this document, I'm not sure if, for instance, you go to page 3, whether those narrations list, those topics listed there, I don't know whether these are your strategic objectives, are your measurable objectives. And what confuses me more, DG, is that if you go to page 4, you have a heading there called priority under outcome 2, but under outcome 1, there is no heading. You don't know what exactly that list is about. Because the challenge is, why this is important? If, for instance, you've got your measurable objectives in your plan, and you've got this MTF allocation, your strategic objective, comparing, looking at time frames, should be followed consistently in line with what you have actually put here. So you must find relationship when you go next year and that year. So if you can actually guide us there, what exactly is the story? I think that is important. The last issue is, what I'm curious to know in the department, DG, is you presented to us a strategic plan. For instance, there's something that, a terminology that I'm not comfortable with, because this terminology has been used for many things in the past, for some time. Earmarked amounts. Yeah. Earmarked amounts. You know these terminologies? They have been used several times for mischief. I'm not saying this one is for mischief. Because of this heading called earmarked amounts, the question I thought would actually put me at ease is to find out. Let us say if you go to that thing of earmarked amounts, that is page 25 in the thick document. There's one thing, program called the property management, for instance. I assume that somebody is in charge of that. Does it mean for that money to be released, that person will present a business plan? The reason I'm saying this, DG, is that if the committee were to be interested in close scrutiny of the execution of that money allocated there, would we be able to put our finger on a particular business plan whose intention is seeking to release those funds? In other words, in a nutshell, what I'm asking is that for the entire department, various managers who will be implementing those various areas of your strategic plan, how do people ensure effect the release of those funds for application? Does somebody say, I'm a manager of property management, I need money, we're about to implement, if they are building a bridge, if it's a bridge, for instance, or it's a flat, do they come to you and say, today we're sorting out a ceiling, or tomorrow we're sorting out what is the structured way through which they release these funds? because that is a very, very critical phase, which actually can actually make us have some confidence that if you want to put a finger, you will be able to find a business plan on the basis of which this money is being released.
So, discussions, conversations, department? Oh, just a minute, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am impressed by your presentation, and I will be studying it thoroughly, and I will make a follow-up on your next visit to ourselves. Today, I just want to know, you know, this thing of a rural bias, trying to rural development. I come from two provinces. I've got two provinces, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. I just want to know if you have a deep office there, because as far as I'm concerned, there will be no empowerment in as far as property is concerned if you don't actually open this office in those poor rural provinces.
Thank you, Chair. May I request that my colleagues assist me in responding to the questions that have been highlighted. What I will do is I will try and respond to just one aspect of the question that deals with whether the outcomes that we have put in our strategy document have been catered. I'll deal with just that part of the question. But if further questions have not been sufficiently answered, I will then attempt to close up on that. With respect to the outcomes in the strategy document, what we realized was that this work that we are committing ourselves to, one of it must naturally be funded by from the baseline, but we realized that all these new issues have not been funded from the baseline because they have not been budgeted for. It's a new thinking that requires a new way of budgeting as we move forward. But doesn't mean that the work must now stop. So what we had to do was to be creative and say, what exactly are we then going to do as a department to ensure that that work does not stop? Now, I'm very unpopular right now with my colleagues because I then issued a challenge and I said I need 5% from each branch to give me 5% to be able to implement these new interventions. So the alignment aspect, Honorable Chair, may not necessarily be coming out clearly in the document, but we've done that. What we've done is if you look at the extreme left after the narration, seeks to be indicating an outcome number. So if you go to the strategy document, you should be able to see the outcome number. The outcome number and the amount that we'll be spending for that outcome number so that you do not have a strategy that is unsupported and interventions that are unsupported by financial resources. This does not necessarily mean that these resources are adequate, but all it says is that it's a start towards funding the pressing interventions, and as we move forward, obviously we will budget appropriately, and hopefully we will get the funds from National Treasury going forward. I'd like just to illustrate the point, just using the strategy very quickly, and looking at OP2, where we are saying 80% of the audits under OP2. So 2.2 there is dealt with for 2010, and this is the amount on that line seek to reflect on page 11 of the strategy on the key performance 2.2, indicator 2.2. That's where you then link the money. And this is how we've done it. It may be imperfect, but that's how we've done it. And this was the first step of doing that. And what we intend doing is when we go back and do the editing, that's one of the areas that we need to focus on and ensure that it's done. And so if you go through this document, through all the things that we've, from OP2 up to OP16 on page 1, OP17 up to OP18 on page 4, seek to indicate the sources of funds and how we will fund our work as we move forward. We do, however, feel very encouraged by the fact that the members do realize that there's much more to be done and which will require additional resources. Whilst we are not extremely hopeful that we'll get all the resources, but we'll also use the existing resources to ensure that we fund some aspects of our work and seek where we can additional donor funding for that purpose. Thank you, Chair. Dr. Devi.
Chair, if I may just follow up on the question that Honorable Gungubele raised on supply chain management. I agree with you. September is too long. In fact, we have begun filling posts in supply chain management. We've just appointed director, chief director supply chain management. The reason I think we're considering the time frame that I spoke earlier, we're worried particularly job evaluation tended to be a problem. But I'm happy to report that we have just changed the whole team. And we are, I think in the next week we'll be finalizing the panel that will be assisting the whole department with job evaluation. So the process should actually be much faster because it is an important priority.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question in relation to our personnel, tough one. You've got X percentage vacancies, but you still spend 100% of your budget. This is our reality. Now, what we are doing is, we've got vacancies, you know, many just continue staff turnover. Through these vacancies, we try to fund our OSD, but we one surely want to do it in full compliance with the PFMA. It's a fact that we came to this parliament in last August and say, in the adjustment appropriation bill, we are projecting a saving in our personnel budget. Please assist us, and we've assisted the legal aid board with $69 million. We sit with the legal aid board, public protect, the human rights commission, all of those entities coming to us. But for us, it's important to say, if we need to come to parliament, get parliamentary approval. If we need to go to National Treasury, because we cannot increase transfer payment without the necessary approval of National Treasury, we go there and we can show the appropriate approval. So what we're doing now is, OSD will be strain for us, and it will be strain on our operational budget. But what we're doing now is the carry-through course of OSD, we try to fund it through vacancies. It's not the ideal. The ideal is to fill all 17,403 approved positions, and all 17,403 positions are funded. What we are doing is, if for 3 months posts are not funded, or are not filled, and yet generate a saving, we see how we possibly then can assist those institutions to reallocation, but it must be in full compliance with the law. The second one, the litigation cost. Litigation cost refers to the function of the operational cost and personnel cost of the division, and not necessarily the other legal costs that you are referring to. Thirdly, in terms of a projected expenditure, I think as a department, and I cannot talk on behalf of the NPA, I think we are heading again for a possible 99% spending on budget of last year. I think surely there's no major problems. There is strain, and we've issued directives on cost curtailment. In fact, we started last year, September, October, and even in December quite specifically, when we see the economic climate and the challenges with the budget allocations, and caution managers, especially regional level, to ensure that they stay within budget. On the issue of earmarked amounts, the money that is earmarked does not come from us. Treasury says, we are giving you this money, it's earmarked, you may not spend it for any other purpose. Now you've got a relevant manager in National Office responsible for property management. Property management has got three elements: leases, accommodation charges, and municipal rate and taxes. Now, the manager needs to balance to budget for all the municipal rates and taxes for the, all the mental justice facilities. The same for all offices that we are possibly leasing. So the point is, we can provide you with information of our total lease, the lease permit portfolio, what is expenditure for the various for the various offices, and this is a function that is centralized. So for property management, there should be a business plan with identified facilities. The same for buildings and fixed structures. They get 470 million is divided for. This is a planned expenditure on the High Court in Malanga for this particular period. So that information can be seen. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson.
Follow up on the issue of the vacancies. Obviously, DG, a concern, and I do appreciate the budgetary constraints that you've got, but the argument that you've just given me lends the fact that you're using the money for other purposes, which means you might not fill the vacancies. You see, that's the concern. The perception is created. Because you've got such budgetary constraints, the fact that you've got vacancies, you are now saving. You're using that money for other. So therefore, it's in your interest to keep the vacancies, which obviously is not what you would say. But you understand the thinking, particularly when you've got such budgetary constraints. And obviously that's an issue that we're going to have to be closely monitoring, because every year we have vacancies. And as you've indicated, over the next 3 years, your budget's going to get worse and worse. So we've got to duly help you try to get more funds, firstly. Secondly, we're going to have to watch that issue. And I'm sure from your side it will be bona fides that you do try to fill the vacancies and not save money. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. And can you, our DG is perhaps too new for the question to be fair, but it's such an obvious one. Is it the case that the vacancies cause inferior service to the citizens? Or, to what degree in each program are the vacancies causing less than good performance? Maybe it's something we can return to on a quarterly basis, but it's a highly relevant question. I wanted to ask just one tiny thing. When you went through your first presentation, I thought you were going to come back to facilities management. And I just wanted to ask you about that, because this business of the air conditioning continually breaking down at the courts everywhere, that's public works, isn't it? But off which, just tell me off which budget, that it's facilities management, I think 55, is that million? Is that where something like that would be funded from? Because the whole thing looks inefficient. Everything's always breaking down, and public works has to be used. And the question is, why must we use them if they're useless?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think surely from finance side, in respond to the Honourable Member Swart's concern, for us is not ideal. We would want to see the 17,400 positions filled. I mean, because surely that would really create so particular inefficiency. But we are not deliberate in keeping the vacancies. We are looking at funding options. And we will tell people and say, we've got this OSD, we still need to implement phase two. We've got this challenge. If there's possible savings, can we make a decision now or postpone it? Because eventually we need to implement phase two. And if we don't have the budget, it will cause uneasiness in the sector. The second question in relation to facilities management, it is a public works responsibility together with us. And so there is a budget. But in addition to this allocation, public works also has a budget for maintenance. So it is either from outside that we need to make money available, or if it is an urgent priority or a critical issue, or engage public works is part of the planned maintenance. So planned maintenance, that budget lies with public works. Thank you. Yes.
Probably, I must also follow Honourable Scholar that maybe one will ask more, will deal with more with this thing after going through it thoroughly. But I just want to emphasize this is that for us to efficiently do oversight in a consistent and a credible way, it's very important that this beautiful strategic plan, where you say measurable objectives, you guys have to take a decision. For instance, if you go to the narration section of your MTF, whether those things that you have listed there are your strategic objectives, since this is an MTF allocation, and what title do you give to them, so that we are able, in a very consistent and efficient way, to ask ourselves as a committee, is it worth doing this thing for 3 years? Is it worth doing it for 1 year? Because one of the things that assist us to work with you and help each other is the ability to, you know, government is highly criticized for inefficiency, for non-effectiveness, but you are able to follow and actually pronounce on those issues when there's proper alignment between the terminology used here and the terminology used here. And that alignment must be consistent with the beauty of these two documents. Thanks.
I just have two questions. In terms of the amount budgeted for educating the public in OP14, is the department still funding SAULA, and will the annual Justice Week program still continue? Then my second question is, in terms of the property management, what is the current status of the Innes Chamber?
Colleagues, please answer.
Chairperson, I would like to be given time to get progress report on the Innes Chamber. I know that it's a matter that Public Works has assured the NPA that it has been worked on, but I don't have full details at the moment. I would appreciate it if I can be allowed to submit the response in writing.
On the funding of SAULA, we have made provisions for it in the original budget. But I just want to make sure that in the cuts that were made, sufficient provision has been made. But in terms of the existing service level agreements with them, the provision there is going to continue. It's just it may not be extended.
And the Justice Week, is that still continuing?
In terms of the current budget, yes, it's still going to continue. But as we say, because of the reorganization of the communications, we may have to see how we prioritize that.
Okay, thank you. I think with the comments that we've made, we can pass the budget and maybe suggest to the department that in terms of the additional funding, we do not be given a document as a committee, additional funding, because we are going to be negotiating the budget now, given our new powers, the point that Honorable Swart was raising, that they give us just they give us a particular document which will assist us to negotiate on our own behalf for our cluster. I mean, yeah, in fact, our cluster and our department.
Am I correct, Sebastian, that we are not considering it today? The budget. We've been given a briefing in order to interrogate it. And then normally we'll be sitting down as a committee to to deal with it. I thought, I'm not sure how it's working at national.
What is the procedure? What do we do? It's up to us as a committee. I think that if I hear from my colleague here that you might want some time to look at it. But I think what you've said as the chairman is in principle, we don't seem to have any problem subject to us further studying it. And then we'd come back. We pass a resolution, then we give a report. And it would help us when we give that report that we file to Parliament on the under expenditure items that the department has not under the additional funding requirements we will put into our report to Parliament on the budget. But that so there will be an opportunity for us to discuss that. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
I didn't get a response with my deed office for
Mpumalanga and Limpopo, yes. I forgot that,
I'm glad to say the deeds office is not with the Department of Justice, but with Land Affairs.
With
Land Affairs. But I think you are referring also to the Master's Office in Mpumalanga. One of the challenges there was the act that requires a master to be at the seat of a high court, and we were waiting for the Superior Court's bill to resolve the issue of the high court. We are nonetheless placing an assistant master in Nelspruit that will deal with the services, and we've also kept the Mpumalanga magistrate's offices properly attended to, half by the Pretoria Master's Office and the other by the Johannesburg Master's Office.
And to follow up,
thank you, Chair. I'm very much aware of that, but I know that there is Chapter 3 of the Constitution. Cooperative governance. You know, it says all spheres of government shall conduct their business in a manner that does not divide the Republic of South Africa. So much as we're going to speak for you at Treasury, you must go and speak for us in your Utrecht. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think we have done a solid work for the whole money. We are scheduled to finish at 4:30. We are done at 1:00. Congratulations, it's been a good show. And the quality is good, actually. I'm happy. Yeah.
Do you understand that we will be meeting with other agencies next week, like the MPA, or I'm not sure. But can I just ask on a separate issue? I understand the trafficking bill was filed yesterday by the minister and tabled yesterday, and it's going to be fast-tracked. I would, as per what we discussed last week, like to see it finalised, if at all possible, and I know that's the ministry's idea, before the World Cup. That would need us to set up a subcommittee. It would need us, at this, as soon as it comes to the committee, through Parliament, to ask for public submissions. You need to give 30 days notice for that. And I would suggest that we look at that. The department is ready to give us a briefing as soon as possible. So I think we could start putting that into process. That we've only got how many days to the 86 days, but we can do it. I think we can do it. And it's a very good bill, and we can even, if there's a problem with implementation, we can incrementally implement it. If we just get the offences in place, that we can send a very strong signal as a committee that we are totally opposed to any form of trafficking. Thank you, Chair.
And I think it was also referred to us in yesterday's announcement and tabling.
Yes.
Am I not? Yeah. So it is already
okay.
Referred.
Yeah, then what we'll do, we'll arrange for the date for the briefing. Wanana will take care of that. And when the briefing happens, then we'll put together a special team to do that. I would want to suggest that there's an issue of us adopting our own strategy as a committee. And we have dealt with that in the main, and I would want us after lunch to come in and adopt that, if it's possible. You've got other committees. No, but we are settled to finish at 4:00.
If members have read it,
okay.
We can talk. If numbers have read it, why don't we address it?
Well, I don't have a problem.
I read it, I'm comfortable.
No, no, he gave it to the chair of the whip. So other members haven't seen the draft. So you have read it, of course, but the other members haven't. So, no, we can discuss it then this afternoon. Let's say we'll give members a chance to go and look at it. We need about 30 minutes to adopt it. Yeah, because we can distribute it and come back at about or we can do it tomorrow, or I don't know. It hasn't come. No. Can we... What are our deadlines with the chairperson of chairs in terms of traffic? Next week, no? Yeah. We'll distribute the draft. We'll do it next week sometime. We'll give ourselves 30 minutes to get through with it. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, I didn't realize that protocol existed. In my heart, I really have already thanked the members. But let me now that I've been given an opportunity, extend our heartfelt gratitude to the entire House for, one, the guidance that the House has given us in the documents, and through the indulgence of just understanding our predicament at this point in time, but more importantly, for the support that this committee has pledged in assisting us and guiding us as the department in implementing the strategy. Obviously, I can't be more thankful for just the efficiency in the way that these proceedings have gone, and hope that when we come here to report on our first quarter report, we will not disappoint. Thank you.
It goes both ways. The meeting is closed. Thank you. When is the lunch?